Hey everybody, welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that came out this week, kicking it off with Black Cat, King in Black, number one. I wish that rhymed, but it didn't. Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by C.F. Villa. This is, of course, tying into the King in Black event, but it's also bringing back the Black Cat title that I know Justin liked ever so much.
Yes.
This one, Felicia Hardy, is dealing not only with Null, the king of the symbiotes, but she's about to pull out a heist of her own. What'd you think about this issue, Justin?
I think this is a great issue. I love this Black Cat series. I think Jed McKay has a really great understanding of the character. The way that she speaks, and we're in her head for a lot of the earlier series.
You love being in the characters' heads.
I love. Cool. Isn't that what the dream? God, if I could be in the head of Pete LePage and Alex Albin on a daily basis.
That's delightful.
No way. That would not be good for you.
I spent a couple weeks in Pete's head. It was, I don't know what happened. If there was a lightning strike. It was just as you'd expect.
Well, it was like a What Women Want situation, but just with Pete.
I finally know what Pete wants. And it begins and ends with a meatball sub from the Subway. This issue, really great art, some fun stuff. Her and her team steal the Spider-Mobile and get to drive that around a bit.
Yeah, the Spider-Mobile was fun bit. I loved seeing that.
And this crosses into King in Black in such a fun, great way. It feels important and real. And the reveal or the sort of mission at the end of the first issue is super fun.
I got to say, this is a great example of tie-ins done right. We've been reading a bunch of kind of tie-ins to this, and it's like, wait, what? Is that really a tie-in? This is done really well. It fits. It makes sense. It's really cool for the character. It gets you excited about the event. I was really impressed with this book.
Well, it's also a really good in on the Black Cat book, because clearly a lot of stuff has gone on there, which frankly I have not been reading. I think we only talked about one issue maybe at one point on the Stack or the live show. But this fills you in on everything you need to know very ably. You're able to jump in on her supporting cast and understand what's going on with them, as well as her previous adventures over the course of this book. I agree. Really fun stuff. I was very surprised how much I like this, and I'll definitely be reading more.
I just want to say the art is absolutely fantastic.
Yes, thank you. Thank you guys for getting on board with this. You've really made my 2020 a perfect year.
Even better than 2020, though, is going to be Blade Runner 2029, number one, from Titan Comics, written by Mike Johnson, art by Andre Guinaldo. This is, of course,
Team That's Blitz. Why you get paid the big bucks, Al.
Thanks, man. I do get so much money off of the show. This is clearly taking place in the very near future in the Blade Runner universe.
You make it sound like it's real.
I'll be upfront and honest about something. Ooh. I've never seen Blade Runner. I've also never seen Blade Runner 2049.
None of the movies?
Never. I know what's going on because I live in the world and you can't avoid understand what's going on in Blade Runner, so it wasn't a big surprise. So I actually like this despite not having ever seen those movies. I thought it was a pretty solid story of tracking down replicants. The main character was interesting.
Sorry,
the conflict,
Alex,
was interesting. I liked this quite a bit. And I know, hold on. Mike Johnson is a good writer of tie-ins, so clearly he knows what he's doing here, and I think that works.
Alex,
yes, Pete.
Because you've never seen any of the movies, no one gives a fuck what you have to say about this comic now. Because if you don't know the material, shut the fuck up about it.
It is the ice skating competition movie.
Yes.
Where they have to do the
You're talking about the cutting edge?
Thing. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, that's very sorry. Well, surely you've seen the director's cut of Blade Runner then.
No, I've seen the director's cut of
You just haven't
edge.
Seen the theatrical release.
They called it the director's cut dig edge is what they called it.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, the director's cut.
I've also seen Cutting Edge 2049.
It keeps getting better every time you see it.
It's crazy. They're replicants. They're all replicants. I have seen the Blade Runner films. And
thank you. Now I want to know what you think of this.
Well, yeah, we shouldn't be allowed to comment on something if we haven't seen the underlying material. Hold on to that thought for anything else we're talking about this evening. I thought this is really good, and I agree with Alex. You don't actually really need to know a ton about Blade Runner, except for Harrison Ford's theological underpinnings to his character when you're watching the director's
cut. Yes, yes.
I have seen Firewall. Does that help?
Nope.
Yes. If you've seen Air Force One, you've seen Blade Runner. My man. But the art
if
in this
you've
book
seen
is
regarding
really...
Henry, then you have seen Blade.
Regarding Henry, I think that movie was fine. I look forward to the comic book adaptation. This book was good. It's a good story. The art is great. It's very I love the tone of the art they have here.
Yeah, I really agree. I love the tone that the art sets up. It does a great job of really fitting into the world. I was really impressed with this book. It really has a great pace to it, a lot of awesome action, some really fun moments where the replicant kind of like gets their hair cut and stuff like that. I thought the whole wall thing was really impressive. I was really thought this was a great, great comic. Even though I've seen the Blade Runners and like them, this comic was kind of above and beyond that.
Classic flex. The art is almost Mobius-like. I really like that.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is very good stuff. Easy to get into, even if you haven't watched the stuff. Let's move on to another one and talk about The Expanse. Number one from Boom Studios, written by Karina Becco, illustrated by Alejandro Aragon. Now, I got to say, this is another one. I've seen the first season and change of The Expanse. And, of course, I've seen The Expanse 2049. But I'll tell you, without slamming it too much, this felt like the complete opposite of Blade Runner 2029 to me, where I had no idea what was going on for most of this book. And it felt like you had to have watched the show to understand the characters, to understand the settings. And that was a real bummer to me because I enjoyed the first season. I would be happy to pick up an Expanse comic book, see more of this world, but I don't want to have watched every episode of the show to necessarily get into it. Did you guys feel the same way?
I've never seen The Expanse, but I understood every aspect of this comic book.
I've seen every episode of The Expanse. I have read the Bubblegum comic book series that Joe Blow did for a little while. I've read fan fiction. I am very well-educated in this, and I thought it was spot. No, I haven't read any of it.
It's funny that you did. I was pretty sure you were lying, but the fact that you didn't mention the novels that it's based on. started with Bubblegum first.
Joe Blow.
Given that we don't necessarily have a familiarity with The Expanse, how do you feel this worked as a comic book?
No, I mean, I agree with you. This is definitely for fans. Like, it is so rooted in, you have to know, I think you have to fully know what the characters when you come into this book. There's not even a preamble to get us into the world and what's happening. And I think that's fine. I think that's fine. It's definitely just not a book for someone who's never read or watched the show.
Yeah, it's tough if you're just kind of like at a comic book shop or, you know, buy it however you do because you like Boom Studios because they do great books. It's definitely a deep cut. I was definitely lost for a little bit, but kind of getting an idea of what's happening. And by the end of it, it won me over. Art, I thought, was fantastic. A lot of talking, but I'm kind of into it. I liked how it ended.
Yeah.
Now, and this ties into the X-Men?
Yes. It does. It's a direct spinoff of X-Men Dark Phoenix, everybody's favorite X-Men movie. Next one to talk about, Lock and Key, In Pale Battalions Go, number 3 from IDW, written by Joe Hill, art by Gabriel Rodriguez. Of course, this is a series that we're all in on, but this is wrapping up the mini-series before the mini-series, which is kind of a fascinating thing that they've been doing. Initially, it was supposed to be the Sandman crossover, which we're about to get into, called Hell and Gone. That's going to be, I believe, 2 issues long at this point. But then, very slowly, they expanded outwards the amount of issues they were doing for this prequel that leads directly into it. After this issue, and I think after the last issue, we kind of know what the setup is going to be for the Sandman Lock and Key crossover. But this is still wrapping up this 3-issue miniseries, the story of what happens when one of the old-timey Lock family members goes to war in World War I, comes back, brings some German soldiers back with him. Things go very, very badly. And in this issue, Key House fights back in incredibly graphic and bloody ways. Pete, there were attack teddy bears in this issue, you have got to have loved this.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I love that whole teddy bear scene. This was just classic Lock and Key, amazing storytelling, the art going above and beyond in all the greatest ways. There's like a moment where she's shutting the door, but like it's like disappearing. It's just Gabriel Rodriguez is a goddamn legend. The moment where it was like, welcome to Key House, motherfucker. It was just this comic continues to be amazeballs. Every time these two team up is just absolute magic. It's just gross and fun and over the top in all the great ways. Yeah, I don't get tired of watching German soldiers die. And there's a fun little like kind of ad in the back where it's Kinsey's Comic Corner. Fantastic.
This was so upsetting as a story, like just so well done and heartbreaking. And it, especially the fact that this is connected to, it's the same family from the Among the Stars story from back in the day. The one where Unlock the Moon. Among the Stars is what's written on his grave. Is just like, it's just so tough. But the art in this book is so good. It's just so intense and just dread throughout. Like we talked about this a lot with Lock and Key, like the way that they're able to sort of have this low level hum of great narrative stress as you're reading this, because you feel for the characters and you know bad things are happening, is so good. Something I noticed while reading this, and I don't know if this has been featured in any other thing or if it's maybe something that could happen in the future, in they feature the graveyard a couple times in this book.
Yeah.
And one of the characters, Fiona Locke, there's a little keyhole in her gravestone.
Hmm.
Do you feel like that's maybe there's something to be done there?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, maybe it's like a zombie key or something like that, or a Bring Back the Dead key. I mean, certainly, I think we could delve into spoilers here, but certainly the goal seems to be the current Locke patriarch in this continuity potentially heading down to hell to try to rescue his wife or something like that.
Yeah, maybe that's the doorway. He opens the door and goes down a set of steps, sort of Legend of Zelda style. One other thing I want to say real quick, the character
is dangerous to go alone is what I have to say about that.
You are the guy that hands him the wooden sword. The character, one of the main characters here, the kid that goes to war, is named Jonathan Tyler Locke. Jonathan Tyler is my brother's name. So I was like, when I saw that in the grave, I was like, yo.
Oh, man. You should send him a screenshot, man. You know what I mean? Just be like, thinking of you, bro. Hope you're good. Because what's great is that, like, you could cut it off because it says Jonathan Tyler and then it says Locke underneath. Mm-hmm. So you could totally do a little cut in there and just make it nice.
Yeah, that'd be great. Do it. Really fuck with your brother. To the point you were saying, though, Justin, I really liked that this story was in a very different mode than the Locke and T.E. title that we knew. It felt like it told its own story with its own tone. It's a tragedy as opposed to the other one, which is like a horror adventure story. And that's great. I'm really excited to see what they do with Hell and Gone. But the more different types of stories they can tell in this world, I think overall, the better for its longevity, particularly as we know there is more coming. Let's move on and talk about Commanders in Crisis number 3 from Image Comics, written by Steve Orlando, art by David Tinto. So empathy is dead, or is empathy? Because empathy has come back to life and the commanders are trying to figure out exactly what's going on. I think we were pretty high on the first two issues of this book. Do you think it continues to hold up here on the third?
Yeah, I mean, I Steve Orlando is having a lot of fun with this. This is really cool the way it's written and the way the characters are. I love the voices and the different stuff. It kind of starts off really grody and kind of crazy in the beginning. But yeah, it gets a little emotional, but then kind of right back into the kind of humor and action. I was impressed with how this ends. It does a great job of giving us a little bit of getting excited for the next issue at the end of each comic. I continue to be impressed with this team and the different voices and stuff on it. This is a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree. Steve Orlando is such an idea generator. You can see it in all of his work. His stories are super complex, calling on so much continuity. And I feel like with this, he sort of put it all of his just wild ideas in full throttle going forward. He's created all these characters, and he has them just driving through all these different ideas. There's the multiverse. There's superheroes just fighting on the ground. We have the villain here is the social callers. It's some sort of social media / cell phone, like tech vampire or tech zombification situation. And like, it's just fun. It's a lot of new ideas all the time.
Yeah.
From new ideas to old ideas, let's talk about Rorschach number 3 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Jorge Fornes. In this issue, we find out more about the cowboy character that we've met in the first two, who was actually assassinated in the first issue of the book. We go back in time, find out about her backstory as the main detective investigates further what was going on with her in this new old Rorschach. I really like this issue quite a bit, not just in terms of fleshing out Tom King's take on the world, but also how the story purposefully unfolded confusingly in terms of the timeline at first, but became clearer as it went on. I still don't know how this connects to the main narrative or exactly what our overall dramatic thrust is here necessarily, but as a one-shot, one-off issue, I thought this was very well done.
Yeah, I agree. I'm really impressed with how crazy this is, but how this issue we're getting like specific information about this main character that we're dealing with in this issue. And it's really impressive. There's just so much going on, but it's done in such a kind of cool way that keeps the story moving in such a creepy but good way. Art and pace is phenomenal. This continues to be a very interesting, cool book. But it brings up this interesting point, and I'm interested to get your guys' take on this. Like, sometimes to love your father, you have to shoot him in the head. Like, how do you guys feel about that?
As fathers?
Yeah. As fathers. Yeah. With daughters.
I have my kids sleep with a gun every night. And
Smart.
Night I go to bed praying that they'll shoot me in the morning, and so far it hasn't happened.
Wow.
I just run right into the rooms and go, abra, abra, abra! But then they say, good morning, Daddy.
Oh, man.
Disappointments, both of them.
Wow. What a startling vision of Alex's home life. I agree.
Same thing for you, Justin?
What's that?
Same for you? With your daughters?
Yeah. No, I am always waving a gun around the house. So, you know, they're going to get I don't need to tell them quite as hard as Alex does. I want them to come to it on their own, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
But I like this a lot. It's funny, this issue and the one before felt like a standalone issue with just lightly touching the events of the first issue.
Agree.
And I think, this Tom King does this a lot where you only realize the story he's telling a little bit into it, and I think it often works. I think it's working here. It's interesting that the characters we're learning about here are sort of conspiracy theorists. They believe that the squids affect your brain, and I wonder if Rorschach is going to believe that as well, because it makes these characters maybe probably delusional. If it's a comment, if he's commenting on believing in conspiracy theories, it feels like these characters are not understanding reality. So, which Rorschach's whole thing was believing these outlandish things, but this one happened to be true in The Watchmen. So to have Rorschach believe something that isn't true is an interesting take. I'm very curious. It makes him less of a hero's, less of a character you can get behind if he's totally on this crazy path. So, I don't know. It's just like a lot of Tom King stuff. It's really interesting to see where it's going.
Agreed.
Next up, Decorum number 6 from Image Comics, written by Jonathan Hickman and art by Mike Huddleston. We're finally bringing it together this issue, which is wild that we're doing it in issue 6. But we have this courier character who's been training to be an assassin. At the same time, these weird crystalline beings have been doing something, who even knows what. But in this issue, they finally come down and hire the assassins and say, hey, can you find this egg for us? And then we kind of avoid that in the back half of the issue, but still...
No, they're prepping for their egg mission.
Sure, they're prepping for their egg mission. There are points, particularly on the assassin side of things, that are so funny and so fun.
Yes!
Particularly because they're coming in the middle of this wild, very dead sci-fi insanity. I am finding myself loving this book more and more with every issue.
Yeah, 100% agree. I thought this issue was great. And all the things we've talked about with Hickman, both in this book and with his X-Men work, where it's like, what's he doing? What's all this information? Like, it was all worth it to get to this, where it's like super fun the whole time. The story's coming into focus. We're seeing the mission. And the characters are set up in a way where it's going to be exciting to watch them bump into each other.
Yeah, I agree. This was a really solid issue.
Yeah, Pete.
I felt like this clicked into place for me. The art is phenomenal. A lot of different styles mixing here, but done in such a great way. It doesn't feel like a separate story. It's really, really impressive how well the art kind of makes this all work. Yeah, I'm excited for more. I'm a little worried about Hickman fucking me because there's all these weird symbols everywhere that don't need to be. But so far, the art is really winning me over. So this is great.
Pete, the original Hickmaniac, coming around for decorum. I got to say, though, the symbols in all of the extra pages, I think they do serve a purpose. They let you digest what you've seen before and see that, like, it's all like sort of a picture frame that holds the story.
They're chapter breaks is essentially what they
are. I thought you were going to say a palate cleanser, Justin.
Maybe. I don't know. Did you... You're supposed to have a little bit of sorbet when you see the picture. Just a light sorbet.
Every time I get to one of those picture pages, I eat an entire pint of Chunky Monkey.
Nice.
Chunky Monkey. Picture pages.
I'm more of a Chunky Hubby, or what was that? Hubby?
Chubby Hubby.
Chubby Hubby. Chubby Hubby. That's the one I like.
Chubby Hubby is very good. Pretzels in that. Always love pretzels in an ice cream.
I don't like all the rhyming.
Here's a couple of tastes that go great together. The New Mutants, number 14 from Marvel, written by Vita Ayala, art by Rod Rice. This kicks off Vita Ayala's run on the title, bringing a bunch of the original New Mutants together, minus Cypher, which is a huge missed opportunity, of course. I think we can all agree on that. But, man, I loved this issue. I thought this was so smart, so well done. As a lot of the recent X-Men stuff has been in terms of focusing in, here you have the older New Mutants teaching the younger New Mutants how to use their powers. They come up with a creative thing that I don't think we've ever seen in the X-Men before, where the New Mutants characters combine their powers to figure out new ways of using them, which was paced out so well and so fun. There's a thing where I think it's two pages earlier, Rain and Magic combine their powers where they're like one teleporting wolf in, and then two pages later it's five teleporting wolves out, which is very funny. Like, there was just, it was perfectly paced out. The other thing that I loved about this book, and this is obviously very much on purpose, but we're bringing the Amal Farouk, the Shadow King here, who also seems to be in some way on Krakoa, which is very suspicious. But clearly Rod Rice is channeling Bill Sienkiewicz, who is the definitive Shadow King artist here, also the definitive New Mutants artist. But it very much feels like its own thing. I love this from top to bottom. Pete, I know you're probably going to have some anti-X-Men bias going on here with this book. But I thought this was really good.
Because you
hate
mutants.
This is one of my favorite books of the week. I thought this was so well done, and I was so happy with how it was executed.
You call them flat scans, right, Pete? Because you're a mutant hater.
No.
Pete, by the way, since you guys can't see on Skype, is wearing one of those smiley robot suits that the right has.
I don't even know what you're talking about. All right, so the art in this is phenomenal. It's like some parts are almost like watercolor. It's so beautiful. Magic is just glorious in this. Some really fun paneling. There's some stuff that's going on that I don't understand, but I do like the idea of bringing the Shadow King into this. I mean, if you got Fuck Island, you might as well have the Shadow King.
That's your excuse for everything.
And also, it makes me want to rewatch Legion.
Yeah, I feel like there's definitely some channeling of Legion here, which is great. And I agree with you, Alex, the combining the New Mutants powers in that way, it's very like Final Fantasy, the video game, in a cool way. And I really appreciated that. Great book. Yeah,
just super fun across the board. Next up, here's a wild one. Post-Americana number one from Image Comics, story and art by Steve Stroke. This is a future society where everything has fallen apart in America. We start off with some sort of militaristic remnants of America who seem ready to take the country back. But of course, or maybe they're actually fascistic. We don't really know. One person escapes, encounters some insane people that are in the Badlands, including cannibals and other people, find a badass woman who's ready to take them back. It is wild. It is bloody. It's over the top. It's often funny, like when chickens just rip apart a dude.
Wow. That was funny.
Don't fuck with chickens.
It reminds
man.
Me, the art in particular reminds me a lot of Jose Van Rip, I think is his name. The guy who does a lot of stuff for Valiant, and he did Crossed as well.
Oh, yeah, it reminds me of Crossed.
This feels very Crossed to me.
Yeah.
Both in substance and style.
I enjoyed this. I enjoyed the tone of the characters and the dialogue a lot. Just, they felt very different to me and fresh and ridiculous in exactly the right way. How'd you guys feel about it?
Yeah, I was really impressed with this. This was a lot of fun. It was really over the top. A lot of action, a lot of violence. You got to love that. This was a very cool, interesting take. Yeah, it's hard to know who to root to, kind of root for here with what's going on. I mean, America kind of looked like the evil empire, but we'll see how this all unfolds. But man, what a great first issue to get you pumped up for what's going to happen. But it's exciting and fucked up.
You don't know who to root for, Pete, so you're like maybe rooting for the cannibals?
Yeah, you know, you don't know who to root for here, man.
Because let me say, the cannibals who we meet at the end of the book.
Maybe we're rooting for the chickens.
A lot of human skin fashion.
Yeah. A lot of them are wearing hair suits, I would call them. Yeah.
Like, or facial, like, faces
or
sewn into.
In front of
like
your drunk.
There's a legit, the leader's wearing a button-down made of human faces. Like, it's wild.
So maybe they're good.
Yeah.
So you
maybe
never know.
Good
because
guys.
They clearly
you
have
use,
a strong sense
you
of
gotta
fashion.
Use everything. You gotta use every part of what you're
use
eating.
The whole.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you, don't you
it's
think
it's like I said to Janine back in the day at the comedy club, you gotta use every part of the Garofalo.
Wow.
I'm still stunned by that. Yeah. do you think, like, if you're a cannibal and you're like butchering the
sure.
Like, do you cut the skin off? Like, I feel like if I'm making if I'm eating turkey,
yeah.
Or if I'm eating some other animal, like, I'll sometimes eat the skin.
Yeah, definitely.
So why are these people leaving all the skin behind?
It's probably too thick, right? Like, human skin's too thick.
Not Pete's
only
skin.
Only one way to tell, Zalbs.
Pete's very thin skin.
Great point. I'll tell you what, after my children shoot me to death, I'll tell them to cook me and eat me and let me know how it goes.
Oh, yeah.
Might or be some flaws in that plan.
Yeah, let us know how it goes. Let us know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let us know. And we'll
I'll have
we
them
can come
on the podcast.
Yeah.
Let me work. We'll work out the menu.
Yeah, you got to start with some sorbet, I think, between every dish. good book. Definitely pick it up. Batman number 105 from DC Comics, written by James Tynion IV, art by Carlo Pagolian and Danny Meeke, Alvaro Martinez, and Christian Deuce. So this is the final part of the Ghostmaker story, but it doesn't end, I think, quite how anybody necessarily expected. It also seems to maybe be the end of James Tynion's run on Batman, which is surprising in and of itself. Well, I don't know. I mean, he seems to be tying stuff up before Future State.
Well, maybe he's just, you know, cleaning, you know, getting a fresh start for his new story arc. I think this was really great. You know, it's nice to see Harley Quinn open up, get a little emotional here with the Kid Clown Hunter. I really like the kind of like flashback with the Ghostmaker and Batman stuff. It's nice to get all that. And then we kind of had a nice moment. I don't know how much we want to spoil here, but you know, I reading it, I was like, "Aw." I thought it was, you don't get to see us as much. It was nice to see a little Batman being a little soft.
I was sort of surprised about that choice at the end. I expected Ghostmaker to be either a villain that is someone who bothers Batman in Gotham, or someone who leaves and maybe works in the shadows to cause a problem for Batman. The way it ended, I was surprised by, and I don't know if I love it.
Oh, come on, man.
But everything else in the book I thought was great, and I've really liked the art in this book and the way they're able to sort of seamlessly transition between artists.
I liked it more for Batman than Ghostmaker, if that makes sense. Like, I like the idea that Batman is trying to be more compassionate and help you out. But Ghostmaker at the end saying, you know, I've tried to kill you most of my life, but you know what? Let's be friends. Seemed a little
quick. Be coworkers.
Yeah. Which, I don't know. I guess we'll have to see how it plays out. But I agree with you. I think it was a little quick there.
I mean,
even though I enjoyed the issue.
Batman can be friends with, like, Damian and a bunch of other people who are at different stages of maybe being evolved.
Well, he's his father, so.
Yeah, but still, like, he's kind of a psychopath. And so, like, I feel like this works. Like, Batman's opening up, you know, to this person and might as well try to work with them to hopefully get Ghostmaker to a better place.
All right, fair enough. Let's move on and talk about Stillwater, number 4 from Image Comics, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Ramon K. Perez. This is taking place in a town where nobody ever dies. One guy comes into the town, finds out about it from the outside, but turns out he was actually born there. This issue, we flash back and find out about his history, how he was taken outside of the town and exactly what happened. I like this issue quite a bit, and particularly coming in issue 4, I think this is a smart place to put this, because waiting much longer to parse out these mysteries might have been kind of frustrating, but I liked the answers that we got, personally.
I agree, and I love that Ramon Perez's art is so good. I've been a fan of his for a long time, and really like it here. This book has such a good tone; it feels like it's ready made to be a TV show, and the characters are really well made.
Yeah, this is very interesting. We kind of have this. We're finally getting pieces that kind of make sense, clicking into place here about our main character and why he's like coming back to this place and what it means. And what he's a part of. And, you know, it's too bad they didn't kind of like push this, I think, earlier a little bit, because they could have had like a baby boss tie in real easy. You know, you had a very
boss baby.
Yeah, boss baby. Yeah, sorry. But yeah, like, you know, that smart baby in the beginning, that could have really tied that in nicely.
Cool. all right, let's move on to talk about We Only Find Them When They're Dead, number 4 from Boom Studios, written by Al Ewing, illustrated by Simone DeMenn. DeMenn? Is that right? Or did that autocorrect? DeMenko, Simone, I think?
Simone DeMenn.
Simone DeMenn.
It's Simone DeMeo.
DeMeo, yeah.
DeMeo.
D-I-M-E-O.
Thank you very much. My autocorrect is out of control.
That's crazy that it changed that letter from O to N. It's crazy.
Nuts. It's disgusting is what it is.
They're so, right next to each other in the alphabet.
This book is fascinating to read because I think the art and the coloring in particular almost overpower the story of everything that's going on. So it's beautiful to look at, but sometimes, honestly, a little hard to follow at this point.
Yeah, it's funny. It's a book that I wish I had in I had the hard copy.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I really think that would make it a little cleaner. It's a book that I want to just be further away from when I'm reading it because it is such a wash of color. I appreciate the choices. I think it is really cool and different. And I don't know enough about what's happening to know where we're headed. But I still trust the storytelling here. It's Al Ewing, who I think is great.
Yeah, I agree. I don't mean to, you know, kind of echo the old man of what we're saying. Like, it's hard. It makes it hard to read. But I think it's...
Did you guys look at it with your spectacles on?
Yeah. I had the, you know, the where the bifocals going, and it still didn't work. But yeah, it's really cool. The art, the paneling, the really pushing stuff, making the story move, helping the action, which is great. But just sometimes, because the layouts are so intense, it's a little tough to kind of follow. So it takes a couple reads. But if we were holding the physical comic, I think it wouldn't be an issue.
Next up, Wolverine Black, White, and Blood, number 2 from Marvel, written by Vidya Ayala, Saladin Ahmed, and Clish Claremont, art by Greg Land, Kev Walker, and Salvador Larraca. As with the first issue, there's 3 stories of Wolverine, 3 different adventures. I got to tell you, I thought the first issue was pretty good. It was well done. I didn't love absolutely everything in it. This issue was great.
Yeah.
Just really well done. And in particular, one of the things that I was so impressed by was Greg Land takes a lot of knocks for his art, and potentially rightly so, but stripping all the color out of it and all the metallic wash and shine that usually goes over his characters, and just in that story focusing on the black and the white and the occasional splashes of red, really emphasized how good and dynamic his art is. And Vidya Ayala leaned into that with the story, which I thought was great as well. I was really impressed overall with nearly every story in this issue.
Yeah, I agree. I think this really is like, this issue is really kind of clicking. This makes a lot more sense, this whole black, white, and blood. I was just blown away by the art, the action, the violence. It's beautiful, absolutely beautiful. A lot of fun, a lot of great Wolverine kind of stuff that if you're a Wolverine fan, you know about this character. So it kind of bounces all over, which is great. I was really impressed. Two or three really solid stories in this book.
I thought the art was great across the board. Like, I love it. Feels like they put them in the stories in a particular order where it's sort of the most black and white, the first story, and it gets redder.
Yeah.
As the issue goes on. Yeah. It's funny, on the live show, Alex, you talked about the cliche of Wolverine being in a bar then having an adventure. And it felt like, especially the first two stories, were very like Wolverine's in the woods and then somebody gets him. Like, it felt like it was dealing with that, those tropes, living in those tropes a bit. But the Chris Claremont story, I thought, was my favorite of the three, which I was surprised about. But in general, I like the book.
Well, I mean, to that point, I think the things that worked about both of these to me, the same thing that didn't quite work about the first two stories in the first issue of this, were that they stood back and let the art do their thing. That they were like, yeah, we're going to do classic Wolverine setups, but it's all about setting up Greg Land. It's all about setting up Kev Walker to do the thing that they do, which I thought was really nice. Next up, Headlopper number 14 from Image Comics, story and art by Andrew McLean, continuing the Pete Block we have here on the stack. In this issue, some heads get lopped. I think a head.
Yeah.
Maybe
a gets head finally gets
huge
lopped.
Head. We get Medusa. Old Headlopper goes up against Medusa. This is just glorious. I mean, plus it starts with a double page spread of a map, which I'm a sucker for. And this is just a fantastic story of kind of like a Conan the Barbarian type of thing, wandering the earth, having adventures, hanging out with the witch's head, as you do. And this is kind of a fun Headlopper has a little bit of a team working with him now, so this is just continues to be a badass, fantastic book that doesn't try too much and just stays in its fucking wheelhouse.
That's the dream. Stay in your fucking lane, artists. But I do. This is a fun book. This is like a modern Usagi Yojimbo.
Yeah.
Did we say that last time? Because I see why Pete likes it. It's very good. I like it as well. I thought the witch head was going to get turned to stone. I was worried. Man. I also like that this is clearly a huge universe, a long adventure that we want to be able to go on for a long time, and I hope we get to.
Next up, Dark Knight's Death Metal number 6 from DC Comics, written by Scott Snyder, art by Greg Capullo. We are getting towards the end here as the united forces of every single hero and villain in the DC universe fight back against the Batman Who Laughs and his united forces of Dark Batmans and Dark Planets and things like that. Meanwhile, Wonder Woman is off on her own mission to try to save the universe at the Universal Forge, I believe it's called. I continue to be struck by, not so secretly, but how this is almost secretly like a Wonder Woman series.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which I think is kind of great. It gets away from Superman and Batman always being the leads and turns the focus on her. And the solution she figures out towards the end here, I thought was really fun and really simple and really great. Just overall, again, just a fun issue of this wildly over-the-top series.
This continues to be a lot of fun. I really, really love this issue. Things are starting to finally maybe go in the good guy's direction, which is very exciting. Epic pages, some old school shout outs, and some touching moments with Clark and Lois, and then Clark and Bruce. I fucking love this shit.
I'm just waiting for the Space Wolverine to pop his claws. It's about time he popped them and got into the action. You know what
You're
I mean?
You're a piece of shit.
If there's a Lobo, why isn't there a Hi-Bo?
That's a good. Or a Tie-Bo.
Oh, boy.
I think it's very funny to me that in this book, the Batman Who Laughs has been elevated to such a god. And it's funny to think that it's just a Bruce Wayne.
Yeah. Like,
that's just a regular Bruce Wayne under there who's just had a couple bad days.
The weirder part to me, there are two weird things in this issue. Not necessarily bad things, but seeing Barbados's face finally, where I was like, oh, that's a weird looking dude. In there, under that giant cloak. That's pretty strange. And then the other one was Superman and Lois saying goodbye to each other.
Yeah.
Everybody else was great. I loved everybody else. And even...
What is your problem with that?
Them saying goodbye. What did Superman say? Superman was like... Lois was like, Superman, you're always the sun that I look towards. Yeah. And Superman was like, you're the lead of my story.
Yeah, you're always my number one lead, I think she says.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the point where I was like, shut up!
Why? Why are you cold-hearted it's motherfucker?
Stupid. That's a stupid thing to say when you're about to die.
I have it here. Lois, thank you for this life, for our son, for being my true home planet.
Yeah, that's very fucking sweet. Beautiful!
Very sweet from a long-haired, mostly dead Superman. Yeah.
And then she says, "Thank you, Clark." Complimenting his hair was hysterical.
Thank you, Clark, for being the best lead a girl could ask for. And then someone off panel, get a room.
All right, first off, Zalbin, fuck you, man. That's a thing. I thought that was a great thing for Lois to say.
I don't know. That was kind of like, and I worked in a newspaper.
Fuck you.
She doesn't love him. She just is with him to keep the news flowing.
Yeah, exactly. Also, what is she doing there? Where has she been the entire time? The fact
chasing
that she suddenly
down
shows
leads.
Up to be like, and I'm also here.
She's covering the end of the universe for
you
the
know
Daily
what?
Planet.
She doesn't have to prove shit to you. She can come and go as she pleases.
She's just like hastily writing out a newspaper on some dead Robin skin or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. This just in. Holy shit. Everyone's dead.
If you're reading this, congratulations.
Bear with me, readers, because this is confusing. So there's a dark forge of
ooh, there's gonna be a lot of bylines on this one. But fun book. Let's move on to talk about 7 to Eternity number 15 from Image Comics, written by Rick Remender, drawn by Jerome Pena. This is a huge issue for this book. Our protagonist has slowly been working way towards a place that potentially could make him immortal. We think it has been for reasons of helping his family. In this issue, it becomes clear it 100% absolutely is not. And he goes from, I would argue, being the hero of the book to turning out to be the villain the whole time, which I think is phenomenal in the best Rick Remender way of doing things. What do you guys think about this?
And conversely, the villain from the book, the Mud King, is sort of becoming the hero. And I would guess that was Rick Remender's perhaps goal for the series. And he's done a great job of really just slowly leading us away from our expectations from the very first couple issues of the series. But really, this issue is the art is so good. It's a real like everything is. It's just really well done from the beginning to the end. A lot of big splash pages. So good.
This is classic Remender. Just like you think you understand. You think like I was so excited. I was like, oh, this is great. Okay, we're finally going to have. And then it was just like at the end, I was like, wait, what? goddamn Remender, man. He is a very impressive writer. This is continues to be a ton of fun, and the twists and turns are very enjoyable. I'm very nervous about what's going to happen moving forward, but man, the art and the action are just glorious.
Great stuff. Let's move on and talk about our Immortal Hulk block. Two issues of Immortal Hulk came out.
Hulk block.
The Immortal Hulk King in Black, number one, written by Al Ewing, art by Aaron Cooter. The Immortal Hulk 42, written by Al Ewing, art by Joe Bennett. So starting with the first one, this obviously, again, is a tie-in to King in Black. Here, so many things going on at the same time. There's no reason this should work with the amount of things they have happening, but it's not only an Immortal Hulk book, which is a thing in and of itself. It's not only a tie-in to King in Black. It's not only a Christmas story. It's also a completely silent issue at the same time. Yeah. And it is phenomenal.
One of my favorites. This is like when people ask you, like, oh, what's your favorite Christmas story? This now goes to the top of the list. Black Christmas. This is just so cool, and so much is said about Hulk without any words. This really is just like a classic Hulk story. Oh my god, this is so great. So much fun.
So this is your favorite Christmas story now, like more than the movie A Christmas Story?
No. It's my one of my favorite Christmas comics, Punisher Christmas.
Like if you have children, you'll read this. You'll read this aloud to them on Christmas
Eve. Yes, I will.
Yeah,
which will be
you'll say,
not
hey,
a lot
kids,
of
gather around. It's time for the horrifically widely smiling Hulk story.
Yep.
The way Aaron Cooter draws if you haven't been reading Immortal Hulk, Hulk is kind of split into different personalities. It keeps morphing between different things. Here we mostly get the skinny, childlike Hulk. Who's been showing up. He also shows up in the next issue we're going to talk about. We also got Joe Fixit shows up for a little diehard-style action at one point, which is super fun. But yeah, man, this is just great. Just a great story. So well drawn by Aaron Cooter. So well written by Al Ewing.
So good.
Again, there's no reason this should work with the amount of things they have going on here, but it's a wonderful one-shot.
Yeah. It's really, truly great. One of the best issues on the stands right now.
Yeah.
Let's move on then and talk about Immortal Hulk number 42, which is the ongoing story of the Immortal Hulk. Here we get a little break as the Hulk fights the Thing, actually lays out everything that's been going on with him, which I think is the first time in 42 issues any of the superheroes have kind of found out what has actually been going on with the Hulk here, even though he understands only part of it. And Thing figures it out, too, like understands the difference between Joe Fixit and the other Hulk and everything that's going on. They eat some hot dogs at Coney Island.
You're goddamn right. You got to do it while you're there.
Delicious. And it ends with, of course, a very typical terrifying battle right at the end there for what's coming up next. But again, a fantastic issue of this book. And I love seeing the Thing-Hulk rivalry in a new light. It's great.
Yeah, you really get to see the tender side of the Thing coming out here, which I thought was really good. And their conversation at the hot dog shop was really nice.
The hot dog
getting into
shop.
Like, yeah, a sandwich shop, hot dog, I guess, being a sandwich in that case.
Oh, man.
The way they talk about the afterlife, the Thing coming back and being bar mitzvahed and like rediscovering some sort of spirituality or having like a second spirituality 13 years after they got bombarded with the cosmic rays, I thought was an interesting take. I'll talk about Job, like just a really smart issue, touching on a bunch of ideas, and really sad watching the Hulk fight and cry.
I mean, I'll just mention just on the whole Thing story where he's talking about how the 13 years there, that was him being reborn. I know that's something that Dan Slott covered in his run on the Thing, but from a Jewish perspective, like I got a little choked up. That's something that they don't really talk about a lot in the books is that aspect of the Thing. And I think Al Ewing wrote it in a really sweet way and paced it out in a really sweet way. That was very nice to see. It meant a lot.
Now, we talked about this on the live show, but the podcast just turned 14. Should we have had a bar mitzvah for you since we've been doing this for 13 years?
Yeah, no problem. I'll shoot you guys a Torah portion and we could read that on the next live show.
Oh, that'd be great.
I would love to.
Yeah.
Plus, we get to go play like video games and stuff or something, right?
Sure. That's how that works.
Isn't there some fun thing?
Yeah, you get to have a party afterwards.
Okay, I'm in.
Yeah.
Yeah, this continues to be amazing. Really great use of the thing in this. Love the thing's new kicks. Glorious. Also, a really fantastic cover. Really love the cover. Yeah, just when you think the story, it gets so weird and so grotesque, but also the heart in this story is really phenomenal. It's very touching. The humanization of these kind of grotesque characters, if you will, is fantastic. I cannot believe what they're doing in this Hulk comic. It's really unprecedented.
Last but not least, let's talk about Once in Future number 14 from Boom Studios, written by Kieran Gillen, art by Dan Mora. In this issue, we're wrapping up a couple of things as I believe they fight Gwen, or they are Gwen. I don't know. I honestly missed the last issue, so I'm not 100% keeping up. But there's some bloody stuff and some fun continuity stuff that happens, and this title continues to be a ton of fun.
Yeah, I mean, this whole like game thing that it starts with, and I mean, the art, to say the art is spectacular is an understatement. It's just so breathtaking. It makes things, you're feeling the stuff that is happening. It's just so intense and amazing. And then you just have this badass grandmother right in the middle of it. Every issue is just glorious, and it continues to be. I don't know why they don't turn this into a goddamn movie or TV show. It's just so good. I want to see it in all the different iterations if it could. Just so many great characters, so much fun. This is really just glorious.
There's a lot of stories about stories, particularly in comics, and I think this one does a great job of making it more complex, and it's a little bit trickier. It really feels like a heightened version of so many things are touched on where it's like, no, the story is the thing. We're inside a story. Mm-hmm. And in this, our main characters are inside like multiple stories at once, yep. And they're competing, they're juggling them, but it's also like they're having a great time. The art is so like high octane action movie. It's really fun.
Yeah.
Great stuff. All right, that's it for this week's episode of The Stack. If you'd like to support us, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. Chat with us about comic books, iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen to the show. At Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, this has been The Stack.
This will always be the stack. You're inside the stack. We're all part of the stack.
Oh, my kids are coming in. I want to let me see what they want.
Is that that bang! Creeping noise?
That blows your mind with that comic sense.